This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio for 2025. We are talking today about politics in the United States and how it's going to change in the coming years or not change. Our first guest is going to be the nominee for the American Solidarity Party in 2024. And after the break, we're going to talk with Michael Toll, a professor of political science at Mount St. Mary's University. But first up with us is Peter Sonsky. As I said, he was the American Solidarity Party 2024 nominee for president. He's a New England native, and he and his wife are the parents of 9 children and grandparents of 8. Peter has undergraduate and graduate degrees from the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. He began his foray into politics in 1987, was elected to his municipal finance board in 1989. Peter's been a small business owner, and he's been employed by such Catholic entities as National Catholic Register, the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in D.C., and the Knights of Columbus. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thanks for the invitation, Chris. It's good to join you.
Thank you. Let's talk a little bit about the whole idea of the American Solidarity Party, what it was, and how it worked as an alternative to our traditional Democrat and Republican strongholds.
The American Solidarity Party has its genesis in a movement called Christian Democracy. Christian Democracy really came to the fore after the Second World War in Europe. And it used the principles of Catholic social teaching as a framework for a political system. So it places human rights and human dignity at the very foundation of its political platform and builds from there. This is the incarnation of it, if you will, the first manifestation of Christian Democracy in the United States, the American Solidarity Party, but it's had success throughout Europe and Latin America and other places in the world.
You know, when we talk often with our friends at the Maryland Catholic Conference, they talk about not being red or blue, but being purple, that having policy points that agree sometimes with Republicans and sometimes with Democrats and sometimes with neither and sometimes with both. Where does the American Solidarity Party fit into that kind of scheme?
Well, I think that purple or that magenta description is very apt for the ASP because, Chris, we don't have policy positions that are on the traditional left side of the spectrum exclusively or traditionally on the right side. We have policy positions that are on both sides. For example, we're very strong on life issues. Mm-hmm. We oppose abortion. We oppose euthanasia. Those are traditional right side of the spectrum positions, but we're also very strongly advocating for an end to capital punishment. And that is a traditional left side of the spectrum. We are very much in favor of peace and international harmony. Again, a left side spectrum environment, very, very concerned about stewardship of our environment. Left side, but also very strong on religious freedom and on small business, which are traditional right sides. So it's a combination of positions, but what's important is they're very harmonious.
Sure.
They work very well together. They're very complementary.
Yeah. Was it tough for you to get into the fray? Were you on ballots in all 50 states?
Not on 50 states ballots. We only managed to get on the ballot in 7 states. Very difficult to achieve ballot access, Chris. That's one of the frustrations about third party politics is that it's really not only costly, but also very labor intensive to secure ballot access. The truth is that the two party system and the two parties control the way that the elections are run. And if they agree on one thing, it's limit the competition. But we worked very diligently to campaign and make ourselves available as a write-in candidate And that's where we receive the majority of our votes in a write-in status.
Mm-hmm. You talk about that third party system. And obviously, when we talk about third party, that can mean more than one. Libertarian Party, Green Party, ASP are all out there as alternatives to the standard Republican Democrat. When we look at, especially politics in Europe, it comes to mind. When you look at you know, in the UK, where, you know, there's what, five, six, seven parties, and to get a majority to elect a prime minister, you really have to build a coalition between those various parties. So sometimes you'll have people who will agree with you on certain things and not agree on others, as you've gone through with some of the things you've talked about. When you look at that kind of system where there is more than the two parties, does that seem to work better to foster cooperation and collaboration? The sense I get is that we've gotten to the point now where the Republicans and the Democrats are so polarized and so extreme on both ends that they're not going to find any common ground.
Well, you see, you make some excellent points, and your observations about the success of coalition governments elsewhere in the world is very cogent. You talked about that hyper-partisanship that we're experiencing now in the United States, most notably in Congress. But look, there's a lot of state houses that are almost evenly divided and have that same tension. And the loggerheads that result, Chris, mean that seeking common ground is not something that is preferred. We know that if we're at 49 or 48% in, you know, our chamber of the legislature, that in the next election, we may be able to tip the scales and get to 51, 52. And now we rule the show, and we can implement our rules and put forward our policy. When you have a coalition and you never have a majority, you never have control, you need to foster those relationships like you just discussed, and look for ways to find that common ground, look for ways to listen and learn from others and to cooperate with others. Our system right now is not working well for the American people. It might be working well for the parties from time to time, but I don't think it's working well for the entire population.
Right. And I think you made a good point there that it's working for the parties from time to time, because at any point that balance of power can shift very quickly. And, you know, the party that used to be in power suddenly is not. And so that creates an opportunity for more dissension and more problems.
Exactly. We saw that just in the last presidential election. Now, all three, you know, the two chambers of Congress, both the House and the Senate, as well as the administration, the executive branch, the president, are all Republican. But there's very narrow margins in Congress. So you get a dissenting vote or a very contentious issue, and you may not be able to have the full power that even though you're in the majority, you'd prefer to have.
Mm-hmm. Much more fragile than perhaps in other times. We are talking with Peter Sonsky, who was the nominee for the American Solidarity Party for president in 2024. Peter, when you look at the range of Catholic social teaching that really was represented in your policy stances, how do we get that more to the forefront, given the situation we have now, a very clear divisions between Republicans and Democrats, right, left, conservative, liberal, whatever you want to call it? How do we bring these ideas from Catholic social teaching to the forefront so that legislatures and executive branches can get things done in more accord with what the church is teaching?
Sure. It's got to be done through third parties. And that's why I ran with the ASP, Chris. Look, the bishops have been telling us for years, they've been asking us to form our consciences based on what the church teaches. And unfortunately, you can't go to an exclusive Republican choice or an exclusive Democrat choice, because neither one of them is representing the fullness of Catholic teaching. The ASP is as close to it as it comes. And that's why I say having a third party, you know, it introduces these marginalized voices into the public square, and it challenges the status quo. We may not win, Chris, but we can certainly bring issues to the dialogue, to the conversation that are not being had otherwise. And we might influence policy as a result of that. So a lot of people say, well, you can't win, or you're a wasted vote. But the reality is, if third parties are not actively engaged and trying minimally to bring a different perspective and a different menu of options to the public square, then the two parties, the binary, the paradigm that we've been supporting time and time again through voting either red or blue is going to continue to operate as it is.
So you don't feel you're tilting at windmills, just uselessly spending your energy, I guess. The other question would be whether that energy might be better spent instead of at the presidential race in down ticket races where you could make a difference in a state Congress, a state Senate, or even the U.S. Congress, U.S. Senate.
Sure.
Are you trying to do that as a party?
Absolutely. But to be honest with you, Chris, you need to start at the highest level in order to get the most visibility.
Mm-hmm.
So running a presidential ticket means that you'll be considered in all 50 states and have that level of visibility. What it does, and what we've sought to do throughout this campaign, is to introduce people to the policies and principles of the ASP, to bring people into our ranks, and now encourage them to run for local offices, whether it be municipal or county level. Really, to get to cut their teeth in politics at the local level is the most effective level. And then maybe they'll rise through the ranks, as you suggest, to a state or even a congressional, a federal level opportunity at some point. But by showcasing the party through a presidential ticket, we have the most impact, or at least the most exposure.
Great. That's a fascinating look, and we'll maybe look to see more ASP candidates on ballots in 2026 and 2028. We have been talking this segment with Peter Sonsky, who was the presidential nominee for the American Solidarity Party in the 2024 election. After the break, we're going to talk with a political science professor from Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg, Maryland, Michael Toll. Thank you so much, Peter, for being with us today.
Thanks, Chris. God bless.
Take care. This is Chris Gunty, and you're listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Did you know that 2025 marks the 50th anniversary of the canonization of the first American-born saint? St. Elizabeth Ann Seton was canonized September 14, 1975. To help with a year-long celebration leading up to the anniversary, the National Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Emmitsburg unveiled a new exhibit at the shrine. Archbishop William E. Lurie helped the shrine kick off the commemorations with a Mass January 4th on her feast day. The shrine is located on the site St. Elizabeth Ann established the first Catholic school for girls, and the Sisters of Charity of St. Joseph, the first congregation of women religious, founded in the United States in 1809. The two-room exhibit is named One of Us, the Making of an American Saint. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. More than 500,000 pilgrims crossed the threshold of the Holy Door at St. Peter's Basilica in the first 2 weeks after Pope Francis opened it. From December 24th, when the Pope inaugurated the Holy Year, to January 7th, the Vatican said some 545,000 people from around the world have made the journey along the lengthy boulevard leading to St. Peter's Square and crossed through the Basilica's Holy Door. The City of Rome has estimated an additional 30 million people will travel to the city during the Jubilee. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. For everyone at Catholic Review Media, I'm Kevin Parks.
This is Archbishop William Lurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. This segment, our guest is Michael Toll, who is a political science expert, and he's been teaching at Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg, Maryland since 1991. He's held the rank of full professor at Mount St. Mary's since 2004. Mike teaches introductory and advanced courses in American politics, including parties and elections, the American presidency, congressional politics, and the Supreme Court and constitutional law. His primary scholarly focus is on American national politics, especially the American political institutions. He's published a book on the presidency and public opinion and several articles on other topics pertaining to politics in the U.S. Recently, he's been focusing his attention on voting and voting systems, especially ranked choice voting, and he's got a book coming out on that topic soon. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We spoke several years ago and talked about the state of affairs in U.S. politics, and at the time, you held out a pretty dismal view of what was going on. Has that changed any?
No, I don't think my fundamental concerns have changed much. There are some basic problems with the way our political system is currently operating. There are some fundamental things that I think we need to address. And of course, one concern that I have, and I'm sure you have as part of this radio, is how we address them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in light of that, we talked in the first segment with Peter Sonsky, who was a nominee for the American Solidarity Party, which kind of, just to recap, kind of really does a good job of getting Catholic social teaching from both the left and right, progressive, conservative sides of the spectrum. Peter talked a lot about how difficult it is for third party candidates to get on the ballot, finances, resources, you know, getting enough signatures to get on the ballot. And his party was only able to get on the presidential ballot in seven states. When you look at the political party system we have, how do those third parties fit into it? And I mean, can they ever get any traction given the kind of situation we have?
Yeah, it's a great question. Because I would suggest that the problem for third parties is more than just getting on the ballot. Obviously, that's a big issue. And he made a good point about that he was running on the national level to get attention, but you know but really the focus should probably be from the bottom up with local parties. But political scientists have long known that systems like the United States that rely on single member districts with a plurality vote, like we do in the United States, those countries almost always, it's called Duverger's law. My students get tired of hearing me talk about it. Almost always result in two political parties. And as long as we're going to rely on the system of elections we have with single member districts with a plurality, then I don't think we're going to easily break out of the two party mode.
Is that a danger for this system? Because, and as we talked with Peter in the first segment, you know, when you look at places where there are more than two parties, you know, especially in Europe, we see that a lot, where the winner has to build a coalition government. We don't have that here in the U.S. So because of that, I think there's not a lot of compromise. Is there a possibility to build compromise given the parties we have now?
Well, and that gets right to what you called my dismal view of the current situation. The problem as I see it in the United States, and what alarms me, and it does relate to the two parties, is that we are now acting as if we have a parliamentary system in the United States, but we have a constitution that separates powers. What I mean by that is, if you go back, if people who've been around for a little while, such as myself, remember that there was more compromise. And the change that we have now, our system hasn't changed. The Constitution hasn't changed. What has changed in the United States is a matter of political culture. Mm-hmm. So, for example, it was noteworthy to me that the difficulty Mike Johnson had in securing the speakership this time was that there were people who wouldn't vote for him unless he agreed not to rely on the Democratic Party members to pass legislation. That's a complete change from, say, 40 years ago, where people would have bragged that their legislation had members of both parties.
Right. Right.
Now, the electoral part of this and the two-party system of this, something has changed in our political culture where it's now seen as a negative if you work it with the other party. And so the threat now is that someone will be, the word they use is, primaried. if you are not zealous enough for your party's position, then we're going to run someone against you in the party itself who will not compromise. This works fine in a system, say, like in the United Kingdom, where you have two political parties and it's a parliament and one side, rules until the next election. But the framers of our Constitution didn't design us that way. They split the legislature in two and separated the presidency. And I don't mean to monologue, but I'll go one step further. The members of Congress now act as if their loyalty is to the president rather than to their own constitutional role. That is also a huge change. The notion that you must approve what your president proposes as opposed to looking out for your own state or your own constitutional role. So I don't think there's anything wrong with our system. The system is the same. What's changed is our culture. What I think I heard in Peter Sonsky is the one thing we might be able to do is change our election system to break apart some of the dominance of those two parties that are causing this.
And when we look at that, we're as you and I are talking today is January 6th. This is going to air later in the week, but today the results of the election, the Electoral College election, are going to be certified. President-elect Trump is claiming a landslide. He had 312 electoral votes, only needed 270. But really, when you look at the popular vote, he got less than 50%. He got 49.8%, and Kamala Harris got 48.3%. Neither of them got a majority.
No.
So,
It was a very close election, although it may not have seemed that way at first.
right. It doesn't seem that way because of the Electoral College. So, are there pros and cons, I guess, of the Electoral College? What works, what doesn't about that?
The traditional defense of the Electoral College has always been that it supports the role of the states. That is to say, we vote as states. The idea is that candidates must then appeal to each individual state, and so that somehow this is a protector of the role of federalism. And that has traditionally been, I think, been the best defense that the Electoral College has. And there was a time when I used to think that as well. Now, having lived in Maryland for 33 years, no candidate ever comes to Maryland
No, because it's locked up.
because there are only seven states that matter. It doesn't protect federalism, it protects Pennsylvania.
Right. And Wisconsin and Arizona.
Yeah, right. The rest of us don't, we just sit around and watch while the other states decide. There is another advantage, I suppose you could say, is that there is, to some extent, a relative simplicity to it. Admittedly, people get confused by how it works, but what I mean is it quickly narrows us down to two candidates. There's the two-party system issue again, because it's nearly impossible to get a third party, because you have to win a state outright to get electors. So, Mr. Sonsky had no chance, right, of which. So the alternative, I think, would be, and this is where it gets messy, whether Americans would really want to do this, but most countries now that have a national election for their presidency have a minimum threshold you need, and if you don't hit it, usually 50%, and if you don't hit it, there's a runoff election with the top two candidates. That works very well. Amusingly, in 2024, it would not have worked well because what did Donald Trump get 49.8? We would have had to do it over again. But for most countries, this has actually been the best system. We probably have to move in that direction at some point, would be my guess, but amending the Constitution is not exactly a simple thing, and getting people to do things differently is not simple either.
Very quickly, we have just a little bit of time left. How can Catholics make a difference when it comes to politics?
I'm going to go back to again to what your former guest said. I say this with my students who, talk about politics and wanting to get involved, and I often say, look to something local. It almost goes back to the notion of subsidiarity, although I know it's not exactly what he's talking about there. But your best impact can usually be in your own community, in the relationships you have with other people. City councils need your help. School boards need your help. Your parish needs your help. Those are the places where we build community. And if we want to change American culture that we don't have to hate each other because of how we vote, well, go volunteer and clean up a park with somebody who doesn't vote the same way as you. And lo and behold, you both have kids and you both have the same concern. I really think that's probably the more Catholic way to approach this.
Yeah. Well, and that phrase we've heard long and often, think globally, act locally.
There you go. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you. Our guest this segment has been Michael Toll, a political scientist from Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Thanks so much for being with us today, Mike.
Thanks.
This is Chris Gunty of the Catholic Review, and you have been listening to Catholic Review Radio.
The Catholic Review is the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full time. Pick up the monthly magazine at your parish or have it delivered to your home. Subscribe to our e-newsletter for twice weekly updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Read it today in print or online at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
Tune in to Catholic Review Radio next week, available on WMET 1160 AM and 103.1 FM. Also, WSJF 92.7 FM in the Sykesville area and WVTO 92.7 FM in Baltimore City. Check us out on SoundCloud or your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.